next case for argument this morning is Greed against the Bank of New York. Ms. Steele.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Before moving into the substance of the appeal before the Court, we would briefly note that the defendant, Appalee Bank of New York, has challenged the lower court's diversity jurisdiction. They have argued that the bankruptcy court's appointment of Mr. Greed, the former bankruptcy trustee, as trustee of the liquidation trust, was a collusive appointment to create diversity jurisdiction with the Bank of New York. There is not one shred of evidence in the record below to support that contention, and there is ample support in the record below to show that his appointment was not collusive. He was previously the Chapter 11 bankruptcy trustee, selected by the U.S. Trustee's Office in the Northern District of Illinois to sit as trustee in a case pending in the courts in this district for a debtor located in Chicago. It's not surprising they selected an Illinois resident. After serving for over a year as the Chapter 11 trustee, performing services that the bankruptcy court found were excellent and of a good quality, it was not surprising that the creditors negotiated to put him in as the liquidation trustee. His job as liquidation trustee is not just to sue Bank of New York. His job is to liquidate property, personal property, settle claims, pursue other causes of action that belong to the estate in the first instance. And clearly his appointment was not for collusive purposes. If that wasn't enough, the fact is that the handful of creditors that they identify to suggest collusion is only a small number of the creditors that actually assigned their claims, and the vast majority of creditors who assigned their claims to the trust would have had diversity jurisdiction in their own right, a fact that this court found significant in the Steele decision. With respect to the substance of the appeal, respectfully, the district court made two errors. The district court erred by failing to follow the Sprint Communications decision of the Supreme Court and creating a bankruptcy exception to that case, relying on a Ninth Circuit decision, which we would submit following Sprint is no longer good law. Second, the district court erred by failing to apply principles of res judicata and Section 1141A of the Bankruptcy Code to bar Bank of New York from making the standing argument altogether.
So the bank makes the point that as a liquidation trustee, Mr. Greedy functions as the representative of the estate and has the same powers that he did as bankruptcy trustee. Is his change in title truly material in terms of whether we should look to Kaplan or Sprint on the question of standing?
Well, there is a significant difference between his role as liquidation trustee and as Chapter 11 trustee, and that is the fact that a plan of reorganization has been confirmed, the bankruptcy estate no longer exists, and he has been appointed, surely pursuant to a confirmation order, but to administer a trust that exists and was created under state law, Delaware state law, in this interest. So there is a difference in his role that is significant. But with respect to the Kaplan decision, Your Honor, that is actually distinguishable and really has no bearing on whether Sprint applies. And the reason for that is, in Kaplan, there was no assignment of claims to the bankruptcy trustee. Instead, what the trustee was seeking to do in Kaplan, and this is a case decided under the Bankruptcy Act, he was using old Section 72 to try to step into the shoes of creditors to bring claims that only a subset of the creditors of that particular debtor could have brought. The modern-day equivalent of that provision is Section 544B of the Bankruptcy Code, and Section 544B of the Bankruptcy Code, again, has nothing to do with assignments of claims. It's a power that bankruptcy trustees have to assert claims that this court held in Koch Refining are general to all creditors. Typically, it's used to bring fraudulent transfer actions, and where you see a lot of dispute in the case laws with alter ego. That's not the issue here. The trustee doesn't seek to rely on Section 544B, and Kaplan really has nothing to do with this case. That really is a case that really is not relevant. And if the court looks to the Second Circuit's decision in the Semitech litigation case, The court notes that distinction and says Kaplan is not relevant when you have assignments of claims. There, a post-confirmation litigation trust should be treated just like any other litigant in the federal courts, and if the assignment is valid, they should be allowed to proceed.
What about the fact, what about the plan's provision that the Chapter 11 case remains open and the bankruptcy court will retain jurisdiction? Does that have any bearing on Mr. Greedy's standing? I mean, the bank makes the point that this is no formality and that Mr. Greedy has filed multiple actions in the bankruptcy court since the plan was confirmed. Does that undermine the notion that the trust has been emancipated from the bankruptcy?
No, it doesn't, Your Honor. For example, cases like United Airlines, Kmart Corporation, their cases are still open in the bankruptcy court today, even though those debtors have emerged from bankruptcy, their plans have become effective, and they're operating free of the constraints of the bankruptcy court. Cases remain open to resolve pending claims objections, to resolve pending litigation. That doesn't mean that the entity that emerges from the bankruptcy process, here the liquidation trust, isn't a post-confirmation entity. But we would submit that even if those things made a difference, under the Sprint case, that decision would apply to bankruptcy trustees, and it would certainly apply to a post-confirmation trustee of a state-created trust. And the reason for that is that what the Supreme Court said is that it does not matter where the money goes, so long as the trustee or the assignee of the claim has full legal title to the claim, then they have standing to cause the injury to be redressed. And where the money goes after a successful prosecution does not matter. The Williams case, which the district court relied on to draw the distinction, the Williams case is a case where the court held where the money goes matters. The Ninth Circuit held that the trustee there had no standing, was not the real party in interest, because they were going to disperse the funds to some of the creditors in part that had assigned their claims. And the court said where the money goes defeats the standing of the trustee as the real party in interest. Following Sprint, that isn't good rationale, and the district court's reliance on that was not appropriate and should not have been the basis for its ruling. The effect of what the district court did is also to create a very anomalous result. What it means is that creditors of the Sentinel Estate could have assigned their claims and causes of action against Bank of New York to any other party in the world besides the liquidation trust, and that would have been okay under Sprint, and that would have been acceptable. But only the bankruptcy trust was the only entity that could not bring these claims, and there's nothing in Sprint that would suggest that that is the correct result. And in fact, there is suggestion in Sprint that the court would not have reached that result.
What happens to these claims under the district court's decision? They now revert to the assignors, who could reassign them perhaps to Mr. Greed himself as the trustee of some other trust?
Well, Your Honor, that's one of the problems here, too. Creditors reach...
It's actually a puzzle from my perspective. And if this is all just a question of paper shuffling, one wonders why anybody cares.
Your Honor, that could be one result. The issue here, though, is because this all flowed from a confirmed plan of reorganization and these assignments took place on the effective date, the effect of undermining all of this to do that paper shuffle is to really attack the terms of a confirmed plan and to set aside the bargain that creditors reach. No one, including the Bank of New York, objected at the confirmation hearing to the assignment of these claims, to the creation of the trust.
I understand the legal argument. I was just asking the practical argument why anybody cared. You would want to avoid the costs of having the claims reassigned, right, because that requires some paperwork. But I bet those costs are less than the costs that are being incurred to pursue this appeal.
But, Your Honor, the other argument that I suspect Bank of New York would make quite vigorously if that paper shuffle occurred is that you have a plan that's been confirmed. Once a plan is substantially consummated, which this plan was, it can no longer be modified under Section 1127 of the Code. It can no longer be set aside. 1144 no longer applies. And
so you're worried that the bank would say that the claims just go.
That's correct.
That they vanish from the face of the earth.
That's right. That they went to the trustee, and that was just too bad for the trustee and the creditors, and these claims are gone.
Mm-hmm. So they've just gone down a hole someplace.
That's right. That would be the concern, and that's why we would...
Mr. Sarles, whether that's the bank's position.
But to Your Honor's point, with regard to the confirmation process, the district court also erred in failing to apply principles of res judicata and Section 1141A of the Code. In fact, those principles, while the court recognized those principles, where the district court erred, and the same error that Bank of New York urges on this court, is they tried to draw a distinction between the assignments, which they concede are valid and were determined by the confirmation order, and the ability to do anything at all with respect to those assignments, and that they say those two questions are different, and that while one was decided at the confirmation hearing, the other was not. In fact, the language of the confirmation order suggests otherwise. The confirmation order approves the liquidation trust, approves the appointment of the liquidation trustee, and authorizes him to act in accordance with the liquidation trust agreement. The liquidation trust agreement authorizes the trust and the trustee to prosecute the assigned causes of action. So the order authorizes prosecution of these cases, authorizes exercise of standing. But apart from even the express provisions of the order, that issue, whether or not standing was appropriate, was one that was necessarily litigated as part of the plan confirmation process. Section 1129A1 provides that a plan cannot be confirmed if it is inconsistent with the code. The district court held that exercising standing was inconsistent with case law of bankruptcy trustees. The bankruptcy court couldn't have confirmed this plan and found it met the requirements of 1129A1 had it concluded that exercising standing would be inconsistent with the case law developed under the code. I see that I'm entering my time for rebuttal, so if there are no other questions.
Certainly, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Sarles.
Good morning again, Your Honors. May it please the court. Sprint has no bearing on this case. Sprint dealt with one issue of assignment law, whether an assignee's standing is barred simply because of the fact that the proceeds of suit are going to be remitted back to the assignors. That's not the issue here at all. We don't care whether the trustee remits the proceeds back to the assignors or keeps them for himself. The issue here is that a bankruptcy-appointed trustee is...
Counsel, what happens to the assigned claims on your view?
Well, we would certainly not oppose any attempt to reassign them back to the claimants. You know, we would not be here if the claim...
Then I have the same puzzle for you that I had for Ms. Stee. Why are two very expensive law firms billing their clients for extended numbers of hours when nothing at all turns on the outcome? Well, this is just a question of getting the same assignments to a different entity.
No, not at all, Your Honor. If these claims were assigned to Joe Smith or to Frederick Greed in his personal capacity, these claimants would not be able to free ride on the estate in bringing these claims.
Oh, that is...
Counsel,
you're the bad person to be making that argument. The bank is saying that there's some risk that other creditors will subsidize these, and therefore we're going to be the champion of these other people who not one of them protested the confirmation of the plan? No. Look, the beneficiaries of the trust could say, we don't want the trustee taking our money to pursue this phantom claim against the Bank of New York. But the Bank of New York can't make that argument. It's no skin off your nose.
Well, that's not true. For both defendants and for the justice system, we should be concerned that the usual...
Look, if we're going to talk about standing here, the rules of third-party standing are pretty clear. You can't assert the rights of third parties who are capable of protecting their own rights. I mean, that's a bedrock principle of litigation. So you just can't assert their rights.
Well, it's also a bedrock principle of bankruptcy law since Kaplan that a bankruptcy court-appointed trustee cannot bring claims that will not benefit the estate as a whole. And that's the issue here. This court has repeatedly reaffirmed that principle. And again, the bankruptcy court has effectively set up this trustee as his own kind of plaintiff's law firm, bringing personal claims of particular creditors where the proceeds will not go to the estate.
No.
It would be a very bad rule if the Pandora's box on this were allowed, because everybody's going to start assigning claims.
I want to stop and allow Judge Rovner to
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
Or maybe not.
Absolutely.
But what purpose do the assignments of the creditors' claims to the trust serve if Mr. Greedy can't litigate them as liquidation trustee?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thank you. Because it is important to clarify. The assignments, if you look at what was assigned, what was called non-estate claims, and if you look at the definition of non-estate claims in the plan, they're defined as all potential claims, not only against the bank, but against auditors, accountants, financial advisors, and any company that transacted business with Sentinel. So there's hundreds of potential claims here, and again, it would have made no sense to object to those type of claims before there was actually a lawsuit brought, because there were so many potential claims at issue. But it is a real concern here that I think that select groups of creditors are going to start now assigning claims to bankruptcy trustees en masse if this gets approved, because they're going to be able to get bankruptcy estates to fund their litigation.
I'm lost. These claims are not assigned to a bankruptcy trustee. They're assigned to a liquidation trustee. Is it that the fact that Greed used to be a bankruptcy trustee sort of puts a red mark on his forehead, and thereafter, for the rest of his life, he can never be any other kind of trustee?
Well, no, but he was appointed liquidation trustee as representative of the estate. The estate still exists. This is not like Kmart or United, where you had reorganized entities that came out of a Chapter 11 case. The only purpose of the litigation trust is to liquidate this estate.
What came out of this case was the liquidation trust. It's the same thing as United. And if your argument is correct, United could not be an assignee of anyone else's claims, because it was once and was recreated as a result of it. It was once a debtor in possession in bankruptcy, and it's really new United, recreated by the bankruptcy process. It's just like the liquidation trust, except that United is operating and this firm is liquidating.
No, United was reorganized. It's functioning as a business. You know, the Chapter 11 trustee in those cases was not then appointed the CEO of that new business. Here we've got Mr. Greed appointed effectively the head of a plaintiff's law firm, but unlike most plaintiff's law firms, he doesn't have to invest his money or his client's money in litigation. They're able to feed on the bankruptcy estate. And you know, going back to the Kaplan case,
can I go back for a minute just to make certain something? Is it your position that the confirmation of the liquidation plan and the appointment of Mr. Greedy as the liquidation trustee had no effect whatsoever on his standing? Is that your position?
It had no effect on his standing to bring claims where the recoveries would not go to the estate, even if you now consider it the trust rather than the estate. But the estate still exists. You can see that in the plan. There are provisions that say he has to act for the benefit of the estate. So the plan assumes that the estate still exists. The liquidation trust, unlike United or Kmart, is just a mechanism to liquidate that estate.
I mean, it seems to me not at all uncommon for a bankruptcy court to retain jurisdiction to oversee the implementation of a plan once that plan is confirmed. But isn't the general rule that the bankruptcy estate comes to an end with the confirmation of the plan? And isn't that a material event for the purposes of our standing analysis? In other words, once the plan was confirmed and Mr. Greedy changed hats and became liquidation trustee, doesn't Sprint become the relevant decision on standing?
Not at all. If that were the case, Your Honor, then Kaplan and all the Seventh Circuit cases that follow Kaplan would just be an inconvenience to be circumvented through a clever ploy. You just now set up a liquidation trust instead of him doing this as the Chapter 11 trustee.
Kaplan ceases. And Sprint takes over.
Well, it doesn't, Your Honor, because, again, the liquidation trust, it's not emancipated from the Chapter 11 process like United or Kmart is when they're reorganized and they go off on their own. It's simply to liquidate the estate for the benefit of all the creditors.
I thought you had conceded in both the district court and here that these claims could be assigned to anyone else, any other one of the 6.5 billion living people except Greed. And if that's so, but you're now contradicting that. You're saying that because the bankruptcy is still ongoing, these can't be assigned to anybody.
No, I'm not saying that, Your Honor. I'm saying
right.
they can be assigned to any of
6.499999999 billion people. Why not to Greed?
Because if it's assigned to Greed as trustee here, he's going to get the estate, and that's what the plan says. The estate will finance the litigation he brings. That puts him in a...
Your effort to invoke the rights of third parties who don't seem to have any concern about this.
Well, this puts him in a very different situation than any other trustee and will encourage the assignment of claims to trustees who can then use the bankruptcy estate as a whole to finance litigation that will benefit only
a
few.
That might have been a good ground for any creditor whose claim is held by the trust to appeal the confirmation of the plan. In fact, it's a good ground for all of the world's 6.5 billion people except the Bank of New York.
Well, no, the Bank of New York, as a defendant, has an interest in preventing the standing of trustees where they're going to be able to use resources that do not belong to the claimants themselves to bring such litigation.
Look, he's the assignee of the claims.
Yes.
He's pursuing the claims, and he's asserting legal rights, notwithstanding his obligation to convey any recovery to assignors. And that's the Semitech decision.
Well, Semitech was a district court decision.
I know it's a district court decision,
right.
But it's a
but it disagree, it disagrees
good
it, it disagreed
sure.
with the Ninth Circuit on this, and the truth is that there's a very substantial difference here between assigning claims to you know the 9 million people or however many people that Chief Justice Eastbrook
just looked
raised.
It up. It's 6.8 billion according to the United Nations.
Million. And a trustee who can... You know, I think the point is very critical, though, where the trustee alone out of all those billions of people is the one who can use the bankruptcy estate to finance this litigation, which does not benefit the bankruptcy estate as a whole or all creditors as a whole. There are other unsecured creditors in this matter who are not going to get any of this recovery and yet are being forced to finance this litigation. That's a very substantial departure from traditional bankruptcy law principles. And really, this liquidation trust business shouldn't be allowed to, as a ploy, to circumvent these well-established principles which have been in place since the Kaplan decision. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel. Anything further, Ms. D?
Just briefly, Your Honor. First, Semitech is a Second Circuit decision. The Second Circuit adopts the decision of the district court, finds it persuasive, and says Kaplan does not apply. Second, counsel.
That's right.
Counsel makes the point that there's no benefit to the estate. As we've set forth in our brief, there were substantial benefits to the estate. There are reasons why creditors agree to the assignments of these claims to post-confirmation entities. Controlling all the claims against the defendant makes settlement easier and allows everyone to realize more, allowing recoveries on these assigned claims, reduces the claims of the creditors who are getting that money to the estate assets, and further broadens the pot. This was a bargain that was reached that allowed all creditors to have a plan that they found acceptable and the bankruptcy court found was in the estate's best interest. That is a benefit. This court's definition of what constitutes benefit to the estate, as illustrated in the Mellon v. Dick case, is not so narrow as counsel suggests. And we would submit that Bank of New York is the last person in the world and, in fact, has no standing to complain about costs. With respect to Kaplan, they have misstated the holding of Kaplan. Kaplan does not state that a claim can never be brought by a trustee if it does not benefit the estate. What Kaplan says is a trustee cannot use those extraordinary strong-arm powers that allow the trustee to step into the shoes of creditors when the claim that they are trying to step into is one that only belongs to a subset of the creditors, is a personal claim, using the language of this court's decision in Copeland Mining. And unless there are any other questions, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under